Hi, this is online editor Emma Prestwich, and you're going to be listening to the 20th episode of the Eyeopener podcast. In this episode, we talk naked people, space rocks, and the Yonge Street sticker lady. We also talk about how depressing it is that almost more people showed up for the Harlem Shake in Yonge and Dundas Square last week than showed up to vote in the RSU elections. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Atomic batteries to power, turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Podcast.
So that was your lackluster introduction to two of the members of our podcast.
Really?
Yeah,
that was the introduction.
That was the introduction.
Don't you have
That's
to
completely inappropriate.
You're the online editor.
No, I was doing an informal introduction. So the two voices you heard were Jeff Lagerquist and Mohammed Omar. Did I say it right?
Is my name Mohammed?
Mohammed?
I don't know.
Mohammed?
Let's get as much ham in there as we can.
Mohammed.
Because
it's funny because Muslim people, yeah.
Great, exactly. So it's been 1 minute and we're talking about Muslim people.
Yes.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
Oh, I'm glad we went there.
That's our job to
be... It's called going ugly early.
Exactly. My name's Emma Prestwich and I'm the online editor here at The Eyeopener, and you're listening to episode 20 of The Eyeopener podcast. As I just said, I'm joined by Mohammed Omar, who's one of the news editors, and Jeff Lagerquist, who is the biz and tech editor.
How come my name doesn't get a fancy pronunciation just because I'm not foreign? I mean, I just get the regular...
Whoa.
We can call you Jeffrey.
Sorry, foreign?
I mean...
What are you trying to say?
Just because my name's not cool and exotic. I'm just Jeff Lagerquist, but Mohammed.
Mohammed isn't cool or exotic. It's the most common name in the world. My parents spent no time coming up with this name. They were just like, what are two words we see all the time? Mohammed? Omar. There we go. And that was my name.
They were just like, the first two guys walking down the street were like, you know, Mohammed and Omar.
Right, hey, yo, buddy, what's your name?
The next two guys we see, we'll name them first and last name after the next two people we see.
The yes. Muslim Adam and Eve.
The funniest thing is that my brother's name is Omar. So his name is Omar Omar.
Did your parents not think of this?
Are you calling my parents stupid?
Maybe. Omar Omar? Did this not occur to them? Did they have a different last name?
I'm pretty sure they thought about that when they decided to give my brother's name as their family name. But I think they just wanted to keep the family name going so much that they made sure this
they just,
kid
they just doubled
had
down.
Two of the same name.
Like,
that,
you know, why not double down on the last kid? Or is it your older brother?
No, it's my younger brother.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Thanks for...
Is this podcast about my family now, or what's going on?
Oh, it can be about whatever we
Welcome
want.
Welcome to the Omar Family Hour. My name is Jeff Lagerquist. With me, Mohammed Omar. The
why
only guest we could get for this.
The Omar Family Hour sound like a Prairie Home Companion to me. Could be the...
Wait, it sounds like what?
A Prairie Home Companion.
What's a Prairie Home Companion?
It's a
Why
public
did you look at
radio
me?
Show that's been going
like
for...
Looks like you're I'm sorry.
I don't even know. 30 years? 40 years?
Really?
With Garrison Keillor, and it's all about this family that... Okay, I admit to not knowing entirely what it is, but the Omar Family Hour sounds like something with banjos and telling stories from your past. Hmm. It sounds really inspiring and hokey and
well,
wonderful
I'm really,
and wholesome.
I'm really confused right now. So, what are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about something that I think is equally stupid.
As my name?
Meme.
Just equally as stupid as Mohammed Omar.
A meme that, for some reason, has spawned 11,000 reproductions in the past 2 weeks since it came out. The Harlem Shake. Jeff is trying to very sneakily... go forward in his chair. This is the Harlem Shake.
Wow, that was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
I know, and there are 11,000 renditions of it out
Wait,
there.
Wait, that was the original one?
No, that was the Office edition.
No.
Just one of the many versions that have arisen all over the world as a result of this one video. This is weird, because viral videos we're all pretty familiar with. There was a trend for a while of universities doing lip dubs of particular songs. I know the University of Victoria, which is the school I used to go to, did a version of a Michael Bublé song where the camera just ran down several hallways while students sang and danced to this song about Michael Bublé not finding his true love. And that was a big thing. But this thing has started
so quickly.
That may
have been a big thing in Victoria. I don't feel like that's that permeated pop culture too much, though.
Oh, it did.
No,
lip dubs were huge.
Yeah.
No. Michael Bublé lip dubs?
Mm-mm.
Oh, no, I'm pretty sure that was just a UVic thing.
That was localized, but yeah, I know what you mean. There's a lot of planking and stupid shit like that, but...
This video, maybe why it's so ubiquitous, is the whole thing only lasts 30 seconds.
Ubiquitous.
It seems to start with a guy in underwear wearing some sort of helmet, hip thrusting, for about 12 seconds, and then everyone flails around in sleeping bags and their underwear and jumps on people and throws brooms.
See, I only find the second part of this video to be weird because the guy in the helmet, you know, thrusting, I see that every day living with Charles. So this is not strange to me. It's only seeing 30, 40 people dancing around.
Charles has a Ryerson Rams hockey helmet and just sort of thrusts about the apartment every so often. I mean, and by every so often, I mean every morning. That's
how
I imagine it's starting the day.
This is our sports editor and resident bullshitter, Charles Venegas, if you're unsure of who we're referring to.
Are you still pronouncing it as Venegas?
Venegas?
Does anyone know
that? Can I tell you about the story that, like, for the first 2 weeks of the original Headlines and Deadlines show that sort of spawned this podcast in oh so many ways. I called him Vanegas for like two episodes before Charles actually weighed in and was like, so you've been saying my name wrong for the whole time we've been on air. And then he made the great, do you need a cough button, Mo?
Is there a cough button?
Not currently,
no.
We can make one.
Just edit those out. That was very distracting. Anyways.
Sorry.
He made the point that his name is meant to be pronounced with a B. Vanegas.
Venegas.
There's, you know, I made the mistake of pronouncing Venegas. Charles's name with the letters that are in it.
Yeah, which is expected of
you
colonial person like you. Yes.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Of a white settler.
Yeah.
I'm a settler. I'm settled. My bachelor apartment, I settled.
You should just accept your fate that you are a white settler resting on stolen land.
Anyway, back to Charles's name.
Venegas.
Do you find a lot of people still don't know that his name is actually Venegas and not Venegas?
Most people do, considering the fact that it has a V in it and not a B. I think that's what most people
mean. Most people don't.
That's what I mean. Most people assume that it's Venegas because there's no B in his actual name.
Hmm.
No, I think that's true.
How dare you jump to such wild conclusions that a name should be pronounced with the letters that spell it?
What I'm interested in is the part that Mo just slipped in that everyone ignored about Charles hip thrusting. Is that something that happens in your home?
No, it's not something that happens. It's sort of a lie I just told. But what actually does happen is that Charles and I are roommates. We're little roommates. We share the same room. Everyone is jealous, and I know this. But the way Charles starts the morning is if I wake up first or if he wakes up first, it's sort of a race to see who can wake up the other person first and say, bitch ass motherfucker, first. That's the race every single morning. And so far, because Charles is always drunk or not even there, I'm the winner because I wake up first. And this
do
is
you,
just, it,
do you get up and say bitch ass motherfucker even if Charles isn't there?
See,
like
if he's
not in the same room?
There,
so you wake up in a room by yourself and start the day with bitch ass motherfucker?
No, if he's not there, I look over to his bed and start crying because he's not there. And then I text him, bitch ass motherfucker. So that's how it works usually. And people are jealous, I know this. I know that people want what me and Charles have, but I know that, you know, we have something special.
They also have matching slippers.
Yes, we do.
Knitted by Charles's mom, if I'm not mistaken.
Were we allowed to say that?
Charles's mom?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. We may have to cut this out. Charles's mom made you slippers. That suggests a whole new level of heterosexual partner.
She only made slippers for Sarah, our other roommate, but I actually just took Charles's slippers because I don't care.
Wait, so this whole myth about you guys having matching slippers is not true?
No, no, it's true. It's, okay. I took Charles's extra slippers, therefore making me and him slipper buddies. But then Sarah, who felt that she had to be part
so
of
Sarah
our duo.
So Sarah horned in on slipper buddies.
Pretty much. We were a duo, and Sarah forced us to become a trio.
Third wheel.
Yes, exactly.
Fucking bullshit.
Yeah. This is demented.
So if Sarah's listening to this, which I'm hoping she would, I want her to know that I know she's part of the trio now, or I guess
she
third
thinks
wheel.
She is. I
she
mean.
Thinks, yeah, it's third wheel for the duo, but it's okay. If she's happy, we're happy.
It's nice of you guys to include her. I mean, even if it just is for her own vanity.
Yeah.
I mean,
and even though we were forced to do it and had no choice in it, yeah.
Yeah, I know. She'd kill you if you know
you
she heard this or knew about.
What you need to take away from this is that these two people are very good at being passive-aggressive without sounding like they are. So, Sarah, you're not truly included in this roommate setup.
I wouldn't say Charles is passive-aggressive. I'd say Charles is just passive.
We went from...
Fair enough.
It occurs to me that we just went from, like, a trend that's sweeping the web and everyone in the world knows about, like Harlem Shake, and then just got hyper-local, like, Mo and Charles and Sarah's apartment. Like, we literally shrunk what is a trend that's sweeping the internet, you know, hundreds of thousands of YouTube views over the course of, you know, a few hours. We've just shrunk it down to some shit that only three people know about in an apartment in Toronto.
It's very true.
Hyper-local.
And this proves my...
We're like Blog TO or Torontoist. We're Mo Charles Sarah-ist. Just the...
I don't...
We're just condensing.
Sorry, I don't read those propaganda websites. I'm sorry.
That's fair.
We also need to note the fact that for a short while they had a chore board that I think got abandoned. I wonder if you guys have a chore board. I know I don't. I can't think of anyone else who does except for Mo, Charles, and Sarah. This was a big deal. There was a whole grid drawn up, little smiley faces on three boxes in the top, and they would gain points by doing chores. Like, the first person to make coffee in the morning, whoever does the dishes first... small mundane tasks that you'd expect a good roommate to do just normally. But apparently they could win points, but I'm not really sure what the points would win you. That was the question I always wanted to
know. Nothing. They fucking won you nothing. The whole idea of this board was so stupid. It was to make sure that Sarah, Charles, and I did things that were expected of a normal human being. Like doing the dishes and making coffee and going to work and class.
Oh, you see, I remember when, like, Sarah came in to, well... We were being grown-ups and working at the National Post at the time. But, yeah, we were totally at our, like, pretend grown-up jobs. And she was like, yeah, I made, like, a board for mapping out chores. Except it looks like it's something from kindergarten where you sort of get a gold star for, you know, being on time or waking up or, you know, cleaning up your shit or whatever. And, yeah, she was insanely proud of this. That, you know, this is how you guys are keeping your apartment dynamic in line and improving efficiency.
No, I mean, what does it tell you? If we stopped even using the board, even though we were still being productive, what does that say? That we couldn't even go to this board and put a point or a star on someone's name. What does that say about my apartment?
Even the board has failed you.
Yeah.
You're not even making symbolic non-gestures towards being accomplished people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
But, I mean, the physical presence of the board, if I have to walk by it every day and I fail to even mark anything down on it, just the fact that I looked at it and had nothing that I could even check off would be, I don't know, motivation at some level.
It would make you feel depressed that you had an empty spot on the board. Whereas if you didn't have the board, you'd just go along with your day. And...
See, I live alone, so it's more a lot of just sort of empty promises to myself where I'll be like, hey, Jeff, there's a weird smell in the kitchen. Are you going to look into that? Okay, Jeff, I'll totally do that. Is it bothering you? Well, we can put this off. Oh, wait, Emma's coming over. Maybe I'll look into that smell. Why not? It's very easy to put things off when you live alone, so... I mean, I'm glad that you guys have this degree of oversight with your apartment. I'm well behind with...
It's very impressive.
...basic sanitation.
In my apartment, we, for a while, had established roommate meetings. We would book
God.
A couple days beforehand. And being a person who isn't always very organized, I mean, I think I'm organized in the ways that count, but when it comes to roommate meetings and setting up an online calendar, I now have stickies, and that's an accomplishment for me. Both of my roommates are much bigger micromanagers than I am. So having an established roommate meeting where
they're
we
macro
have...
micromanagers?
No, micromanagers in the sense that they...
But they're big, so it's macro.
Jeff, you failed economics. Stop talking about this.
It's true. Actually, we probably shouldn't say that, considering you're the business tech editor.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, Jesus. Thanks a lot. I mean,
you got an A in economics.
Anyway, speaking about failing classes, I really wonder how the new executives of the RSU are going to do in their classes, or if they just drop out completely. Our most recent RSU election happened on Wednesday night, and no surprise, Students United swept the whole election. Melissa Palermo, who was the Students United candidate, beat Robel Mohammed, who was... Is that okay, pronunciation-wise?
Well, you got his last name true, right? But his first name is Roble.
Roble?
Yeah.
But there's no
Robo
accent.
Mohammed sounds awesome, yeah. I mean...
I know. He actually...
Robo Mohammed!
All right, let me guys know when this racist fest is over.
It's like a Muslim robot! News, weather, and sports coming up at the top of the hour.
Alatron 3000.
Anyways, Melissa Palermo got almost 1,000 votes more than Robel Mohammed did, which wasn't really
his name
surprising.
Is not Robel.
How do you
it's
say it?
Roble.
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 Can we just call him that and print his name in the paper?
But the problem is, when you read the story in the paper, the pronunciation's irrelevant, so you can't blame me because I've never actually said his name. Anyway, Students United swept this election. None of us were surprised.
No, we need to provide some background information for our listeners.
We do.
All three of them. The Students' Union is a group of students who work together to provide better services to Ryerson's community. They fight for our...
Equity. Diversity.
Yes, very true.
Accessibility.
Our non-bottled water.
They make sure we are getting rid of non-bottled water.
Handfuls of water, I believe, was the...
Yeah. They
platform they ran on.
They represent us provincially and nationally in the fight for lower tuition fees. All admirable goals. However, the problem with Ryerson's campus politics is that it's only been one slate running every year. So this year's slate, as you know, it was for the past 4 or 5 years, was called Students United. They've only had two challengers this year. One of them was Roble Mohammed, and Annie Durgalstanian, who is running for VP Equity. And yeah, like Emma said, everyone won. It was great. They got drunk at the Ram. I mean, they didn't get drunk at the Ram. And yeah, they'll be the executive for next year.
Will Robo Mohammed crush them and finally bring justice to Ryerson?
No, he already lost.
Fuck. I mean, they are powerful. They must be very strongly united. If they've defeated Robo Mohammed, then...
They must have
had some sort of Gatling gun or a rocket launcher...
Who knows? The CFS meetings occur behind closed doors. Who knows what kind of technologies they're unveiling there? But, yeah, it's interesting that...
Weapons technologies?
I really don't
know.
What
does the CFS have to do with this?
Because the Students United slate, the current RSU executive members that are part of that slate, they voted to become part of the CFS many years ago. So, many of them attend CFS meetings. Some former Students United... slate RSU executive members have gone on to become national CFS employees. So yeah, we're pretty tight with the CFS, and their national meetings aren't open to the media, which I find super interesting. But anyways, I think it's interesting what Mo said. We call him Mo, by the way. His longer name becomes a subject of debate in terms of pronunciation. That's the only reason we call him Mo. But
no comment.
No, exactly. There's no comment.
Thank you, Jeff Lagerquist.
But what I find interesting is
that... I have a last name with like 8 consonants in a row, and now people can still pronounce my name, but Mo, I mean, that's like from God knows where.
Nobody
Mohammed.
Can really claim that they are dictators in any sense. Many of the causes that the RSU promotes, most of the students seem to agree with. Some people don't, and there are always detractors. So it... When speaking about the slate winning every year, it becomes hard to talk about what the problem behind that is. But it was interesting that this year there were two, that Roble Mohammed and Annie Durgalstanian seemed to gain some traction, except for the fact that everyone kept spelling Annie's name wrong. Her name was spelled wrong on the RSU website, which caused us to spell her name wrong. And in the RSU election poll results that are at the Ram, her name was spelled wrong too. I guess it was hard, but that's got to be pretty It's going to beat you down a bit.
And she told me that she emailed them a couple of times to correct the name, and they, I guess, didn't get the memo.
Wait, so she's with Students United, or she's not?
She's not with Students United.
So maybe somebody was slighting her with the improper spelling of her name because she's an incumbent?
I don't think we can say that. We can only wonder.
Interesting. But
also, something that
I... Or not interesting because it's RSU politics, but...
Yeah, no one seems to be interested in it. But the fact that we still cover them so intensely, you guys must be interested in. Maybe it is sad, but at the same time, if we didn't say anything about these politicians, these elected representatives, they're supposed to vote on things that help us somehow, then would we be doing our jobs as a newspaper? I don't know.
No, these are people who make, the five executives at least, make $150,000 a year, and that's all from student money. So students at least have the right to know who is running, why is, you know, only one slate running every year, why is there such a shortage of people who are remotely capable of challenging the slate. And at the same time, it just shows how student apathy is just fucking rampant in this campus.
How Melissa Palermo can get in, even if this isn't true, but if there aren't any other opposing slates, she could easily get in just because her face is the biggest on the poster. Which may have happened. If there are no other opposing slates, then there's nothing else to vote for. You go, Melissa
Palermo.
Vote for
someone with a big face.
I saw
I
her
can
name
trust that big face.
On that sheet. And she's a big face. So I guess I'll check her name off. And that isn't really a proper way, even though you may think that most of the stuff our student reps deal with doesn't really relate to you. It has to do with lobbying the TDC for lower discount passes, trying to lower tuition fees. You see my little quotation fingers? You probably don't. No, I know you don't. But the campaigns that they offer, many students don't feel like they relate to them. But at the same time, you're voting on them, and they may make a difference at some point. So,
yeah.
Who here voted? Just saying.
It's true. Well,
didn't vote at all. A girl asked me why she did. She said, oh, have you voted yet? I said, no. And she was a little bit indignant. She's like, well, why not? I mean, don't you care? I'm going to be graduated. What the hell do I care about the newest, collaboration of Students United? I assume nothing's going to change, and I won't even be here to find out. So there's a little bit of student apathy for you. I mean, it doesn't really affect me so much, and I can relate to a lot of students who really couldn't care less.
And I think it was only around 1,800 to 1,900 students that did vote. So if you say we're 30,000 students on campus, that's less than 10%. Is that less than 10%? Fuck, I'm terrible at math.
No, it is, definitely. 3,000 students would be 10%.
Work up stat for the news section.
Oh,
let's break
God.
It down to grade 5 math. 3,000 students would be 10%. 1,800 students is like 7%.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. So less than 10% of Ryerson students have voted.
These people make $30,000 a year while they're technically still in school.
And they're voted in by that few Ryerson students. I love this idea. Oh, we represent Ryerson. They don't know your name. It would be as if we elected a government in Canada and they were all complete strangers and we had no idea what they were doing at any given time.
I really want this job. Let's just say that. If it didn't involve having to make up bullshit to deter student campus media, I would totally take it. $30,000 a year. Yeah, I mean, you have to deter your degree for a while. Many RSU executives told us that. They can't handle the responsibilities of work and being in school, so they take one class or two for about a year. But still, $30,000 a year, that the prospect of five figures sounds amazing to me right now. Yep.
Well, moving on. Back to Harlem Shake. Ryerson had their Harlem Shake video this afternoon. It was in Dundas Square. And there was, what did you say, 700, 800 people?
Yeah.
Based on that video. I think it was fucking awful. It was a terrible video. I am extremely proud of this school for creating such a horrible piece of shit.
So who actually is behind the Ryerson Harlem Shake video?
I'm sure it's a bunch of students who just thought it was a great idea. And you know what? It is a great campus event to have.
Are we just doing this because every other university in the world has already done it and we have to say like, oh yeah, us too. I mean, I know U of T got in the Toronto Star, I believe it was, for the turnout at their video
apparently had something to do with the Image Arts class of 2016, which are the people that just came in this fall. So.
Hipsters, then.
Hipsters.
Hipsters were on top of something popular.
I think the problem with this video...
That's not the one you're looking for.
No? Is that not the... That's
this
the
is
right
not the one
well,
you're
I'm,
looking
I'm,
for.
I'm super glad that we... I just,
oh, wow.
Look,
yeah.
Oh,
apparently, 16,000 people have viewed the Ryerson Image Arts class video. See, this one's better. Look at the man wearing his... this is unfair to you guys. You can't see it. But...
Right now, there are a bunch of people doing...
Some sort of shake.
Yeah.
There's a man wearing an entirely orange outfit. Or maybe it's a woman, because when they pull the orange suit back, you can see boobs. But, no, the one that happened this afternoon was in Dundas Square, and it starts with Eggie, our Ram mascot, hip thrusting. But then there are probably 800 people dancing. I think the problem with this one is that there were too many people, and you couldn't see what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Like, just the camera angle itself wouldn't let you see anyone, except for the 15, 20 people who were right in front of it. But, you know, it shows that sometimes Ryerson students can come together, even though it was for a stupid thing like a Harlem Shake.
They can't come together to vote in a student government.
Oh,
when
no,
it
no.
comes to, like, yeah. thrusting in a public space, then, you know.
Speaking of stupid things and too many people, some space rocks fell in the Ural Mountains in Russia today, which you may or may not have heard about. But yeah, it hurt over 1,000 people.
Why are you calling them space rocks?
Because it sounds better than meteors.
How does that sound better than meteors? Space rocks just sounds made up. Everyone's heard of meteors. I kind of like that this happened. I don't know why. It just seems cool.
I agree.
I don't know. That was cool news to wake up to this morning. Something a little different.
It's true.
Wow, that's a horrible thing to say.
Well,
900 people
were
injured.
Usually most of like the damage is from like some war or there's a disease or something. Some shit just fell out of space and like fucked up some junk in Russia. That's, I don't know, change of pace. I followed the news way too closely. Didn't see that coming.
No, not at all.
That's true.
Betcha they didn't see that coming in Russia. Moving on.
The response was kind of hilarious, too. The number of people that posted videos speaks to the fact that we all have smartphones. You know, 100 years ago, you wouldn't hear about it for 2 weeks. But now everyone has a smartphone video up within 2 minutes. Even though their leg is bleeding and it's broken, they already have a 2-minute video uploaded about the video.
Meteor fell on me just now, #WTF.
Takes a photo of the bleeding leg.
I'm wondering how these people got these videos. Like, how long does it take for a meteor to crash? Like, do you have enough time to film the thing hitting, or...
Well, I think they were visible for a while. I mean, it was a meteor shower, so you'd be able to look up into the sky and see a great deal of them sort of, crossing the horizon and all this, but if one was falling at you, I don't know if you'd be able to sort of take a video of it.
Okay.
No, it's crazy. Someone got
also
a video.
Russians love dash cam videos.
Yeah, we are currently watching a video. This is so unfair to you.
I would
understand
poop
this.
My pants if I saw that.
Pooping.
Poop.
But no, yeah,
don't you
dash
poop your
cam.
Pants, usually.
Well, I mean, I usually just do it under natural conditions, but that would cause me to poop my pants at that particular
moment. Accelerates your pooping of the pants.
Speaking of pants pooping and other weird things, our Love and Sex issue just came out, which you probably saw because there's Moe's just expressed.
There's
something.
No pants pooping in our issue. Please
no,
pick it
no.
up.
Yes, there is. If you're into that, there totally is. Just read every article, you'll find it.
Yes.
But what there is in
new
our
section.
Love and Sex survey, which we were handing out around campus, you were asked whether you liked water sports or scat play, which for people who don't know, water sports involves peeing and scat involves pooping. So it could have been the Love and Sex issue
oh.
if enough people said they liked it.
I've been doing it wrong.
All of these years.
I've been puking instead. Would puking be considered water sports?
Oh no, it depends how solid it is.
What if you have diarrhea? Is that water sports or is that scat play?
If you like that stuff, you could just circle both in the Love and Sex survey to cover
so
both.
Diarrhea is scat play water sports?
I guess it would be, but that didn't come up on the survey. Apparently no one likes that. But yeah, it was so interesting. Our Love and Sex issue has been coming out for probably 15 or 20 years, and the same number of people were scandalized by it. We were circulating the paper on Wednesday, and Jeff got called a smut peddler.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, that's kind of an old-timey term. I really don't know... says smut peddler anymore,
but give it
yeah, it was outside the library, and somebody was just like, oh, what is this filth? Look at this person putting these papers here. You're a smut peddler peddling your filth on campus. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. It was odd, and I really didn't know how to react to it. I was just sort of standing there. Yeah, okay, it's fine. Smut peddler.
Did you like smile or just frown or did you say anything to him?
No reaction. Deadpan.
Yeah. You should have just looked at him and went, oh, yeah.
Yeah, you go to,
smut,
you go to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what was that guy you were talking about at the pool?
There is a very, what should I say, dirty man? I'm sorry, dirty man, if you're listening to the podcast. Because I know you have a radio background, but I'm just going to take this chance now. There's a man at the pool that I work at. I work at the pool on campus. Who often comes up to me and discusses items about being naked. He has felt the need to remind me several times that Hanlon's Point has a nude beach that he often goes to. He touches my arm a lot. And when the Love and Sex issue came out, full disclosure, I modeled for our Love and Sex issue.
Is Jeff Lagerquist gonna have to choke a motherfucker?
You don't have any competition, don't worry.
You're penalized.
Alright, okay.
It's true.
I'll see you at the pool.
But I modeled for this issue, and this older man came up to me. Okay, he wasn't even older, he was just old. He came up to me and he said, there was somebody in the newspaper this week who looked very familiar. And I thought it said Eleanor Prestwich, and I thought it was you.
A lot of chicks named Eleanor.
But maybe it isn't, and I felt the need to just say, okay, fine, yeah, you caught me, it was me.
Was that Florence or Gertrude or,
Jezebel.
I figure those names would be more befitting to his generation than ours, but yeah. And I said, yes, I modeled, and I asked him what he thought about the issue, and he said, to be frank, it makes a man quite horny.
What, he actually said that?
And to hear a saggy old man say horny?
Oh my god, I'm gonna drown this saggy old man in the Ryerson pool, so
he always talks about it
in the next eye opener. News editor Muhammad Omar will be on top of this.
I actually saw him today.
Man drowns in Ryerson Pool.
When I was walking down to campus, I was walking down Yonge Street.
Ever.
And the old man, I have never seen him outside the pool.
I didn't say who won.
No, guys, it was crazy. I've never seen this man out of the pool. I thought he was an exclusively pool phenomenon. I see him on Yonge Street, and I think about acknowledging him, then I decide not to. But the last minute, he grabs my arm and he says, hi! And I just looked and ran away because the fact that this saggy old man touched me outside of the pool in my professional capacity just brought forth emotions in me I didn't know I felt.
I get touched by saggy old men all the time, but never in a professional capacity. I mean, that's what...
Wait, did you say I'm going to touch my saggy old man all the time? Is that what you said?
Yeah, but not in a professional capacity. That's just social.
Well, speaking of Yonge Street, because that's the last thing I heard in this ridiculous conversation, did you guys know about the sticker lady? No?
No.
Okay. No.
The sticker lady is a phenomenon on Yonge Street for the past 20 years, like on and off. What she does is she walks up to people and gives them a sticker of a heart. And this happened to me a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't know this person was there for a while. What she does is she gives you the sticker and compliments you and says, like to me, she said, a sticker for a handsome young man. And I was like, oh, that's great. Someone finally recognizes how beautiful I am. And then she goes, could I ask for a donation? And I said, donation to what? And she goes, for myself. And, you know, because I'm a nice guy, I said, hell no! And I didn't give her anything. But anyway, in the Sun today, I read that she was back now, and she had been, you know, missing for a while, and the last time she was seen was in Montreal in 2005. But now she's back on Yonge Street, and she's had a history with the police, like she was charged with theft a couple of times. She's been reported to...
So what you're saying is an undesirable person is bothering people on Yonge Street?
With heart stickers.
Oh, okay.
That's why it's different this time.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've said that she has this $350,000 house in some goddamn GTA city, or town. They've said that, you know, she actually has a lot of money, and she drives a 2001 Volkswagen car, but she still asked for money on the street with these stickers. And the funny part about this is that she's doing nothing wrong. She's giving people stickers and asking for money, which is what you guys would call in this Western society. What would you call that?
Charity?
I think you're looking for capitalism.
Yes. I don't know what you're talking about. But anyway, that's...
Let me just plug it in. I'll cut it, but we need to plug it in.
Is it dying?
Yeah, it is. It says you are now running on reserve battery power. We have 9 minutes left. Go, Jeff, go!
Oh, no.
Obviously, I'll cut this out, but...
You can just stop it and add it later. Oh, thanks for crushing my shoulder, Jeff.
Sorry, we had to pee and stuff, because that's what humans do, but we're back. And we want to talk some more about stealing stuff, which some asshole at Ryerson has been doing. A bunch of lockers have been stolen from in the past couple months. But what's crazy about it is the locks are still on the lockers. They haven't been broken off. The lockers haven't been bashed in somehow. Stuff has just been missing, mostly electronics. So Ryerson Security has called in an independent company called Intercon Security to look into this.
Oh, those shady fake cops. That's totally awesome. Why wouldn't we call, you know, the real police for, you know, a theft on campus? I'm glad that we have the same security as, you know...
No, you're totally wrong. Why would we call the Toronto Police to come and investigate shit stolen from lockers? Really? Do you think they have more important things to do?
Well, I mean, how pervasive is this problem? Are we having, like, thousands of dollars of student shit being stolen? Like,
no, it's
why are we hiring a private firm? Last time I checked, we do have a police force that deals with things of this nature.
We're already with Intercon. We're not hiring these people. They're already with us.
Oh.
Intercon is a private firm, yes, but we have a partnership with Intercon.
So those dicks that asked me for my student card that one time.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that right now, because that's a long story. But to go back to lockers, the whole problem is that it's not some guy figured out some way to steal from lockers. It's people are using lockers to store shit like laptops, iPods, and expensive electronics. So what security told us is students should not be using these lockers to store these valuable, you know, electronics. Because even if you didn't have a lock, and even if someone had no idea how to break a lock, they can also use something like an axe and break your lock. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, sly or...
This is all fucking asinine. I mean, isn't the whole premise of a locker is that I'm going to lock up a valuable thing that I want to leave in here? Like, if it's in a locker, I'm putting it in there because it's inherently valuable and it belongs to me. So they're telling me, don't put valuable belongings in a fucking locker. That's ridiculous.
From Ryerson's security perspective, that's a bit of a cop-out.
It is a huge
cop-out. Because
we're
having a security compromise, just don't store expensive shit in there so we won't have to feel bad about it.
Oh, blame the students, eh? Like, it's your fault for thinking that you could keep some expensive shit that belongs to you in a locker secured by your own lock in a university patrolled by security personnel.
But see, the problem is that...
What the hell were you thinking?
Some students will use a shitty lock. So... Even if you don't know the code for this, you can easily break it. And there's videos on YouTube that tell you how to break into a lock.
Dude, yeah. I want to know this.
Yeah, so it's not that hard for someone.
We've all seen how to do it with like a pen cap and stuff, but I mean, if you buy a decent lock, you should have a decent lock. If I'm gonna throw my MacBook in a locker,
exactly,
have a decent lock. That's fine.
Yeah.
But to say lockers are not meant for storing valuable goods, that's just retarded. Like. You know, we'll lower the crime rate by telling everyone to just be nicer to each other.
So maybe they shouldn't have lockers then, if there are all these technologies. I'm currently watching a video about how to pick a lock with a soda can. Apparently it's super easy. You could just watch this video 3 times and then break into someone's locker and steal their, you know, their expensive laptop.
I would agree with that. Don't have lockers. If lockers are an unsafe place to put your valuable belongings, we shouldn't have them. Either make sure that you can use them effectively with your shit that you're bringing to campus every day. I'm sure people aren't storing priceless works of art or gold bars in there. This is just regular student shit like laptops, smartphones, iPods, whatever the hell you've got. It's not an outrageous thing to want to store your belongings on campus, so you know what? Tear out the laptops then if you're not, or the laptops, the lockers. If you're not, you know, able to, you know, guarantee their security, then I guess we shouldn't be doing it, but
yeah.
Sad state of affairs when a locker isn't enough to secure your shit.
It's definitely shitty for students not to be able to have this safe place on campus to store their stuff, but at the same time, if you're in class, if you're going out and you have a backpack, you know, I want to leave my stuff anywhere, even if it was a locker, even if I had a $100 lock on my locker. I would still not keep my precious valuables in this locker. So it's not a... I wouldn't think of it as a cop-out. I think it's more of a, hey, listen, this shit costs a lot of money.
be careful with it.
Wait, so what's acceptable to put in a locker and what's not? Like, am I allowed to put
my
winter coat in the locker? Is that going to be stolen? Is that too valuable? Like, where do we draw the line? Like,
I put my socks in a locker.
Well, I mean, your socks are inherently valuable. I mean, I've been on some men's socks just yesterday, used ones.
But that brings up such an interesting point about this being a huge commuter campus, and I haven't spent that much time at other universities. Maybe they have as many lockers as we do. But I think a big appeal of the lockers is that if you live in Stouffville or Whitby or somewhere else horrible, you want to store some shit on campus so you don't have to truck back and forth with you every day. And if you can't rely on that security system, then what are you going to do? That's kind
of
tricky.
Frankly, I'd be in favor of students paying for lockers. Like, if I had to rent a locker on campus...
They do pay for lockers.
Wait.
What are you talking about?
You kidding me?
You think lockers are free? You pay for them, man.
There's tons of ones. I can just put a lock on
it.
This
is not
the
Wild Wild West anymore, okay? Things have changed.
The Wild West of student lockers. Wow, I'm Billy the Kid. I'm gonna store my shit in any locker I want.
Most right, though. Lockers are registered to students, and you pay for them. The lockers in the
back
are...
Wait, I misunderstood. I thought these were just the common lockers in, like, the library building that, you know, you can put a lock on for an afternoon, and, you know, they're just free lockers, and they say, you know, if you leave your lock on for 48 hours, they'll cut it off.
No. The problem is in Kerr Hall. So
these are paid for lockers.
Yeah.
Fuck this. That would absolutely drive for a locker. And somebody told me, okay, Jeff, we'll take your money for the locker, but don't think about putting anything valuable in there.
Well, if you have a $5 lock on it.
Well, invest in a good lock. I mean, that's just common sense.
That's what security say. That's all they're saying. They're saying, we're going to try and catch anyone.
They're saying that the locks are going back on the lockers, even though, like, you know, people are stealing stuff without even breaking the lock. They can't even guarantee the security. Even if I had a, like, you know, $70 lock on my locker, that locks are irrelevant. Like, it's ridiculous. If somebody is taking my money for the purpose of a locker, and then they tell me, don't put anything you value in that locker, that's exactly what you would be wanting to do with a locker, is it's for inherently valuable things. If it's not valuable, I'll just leave it on the fucking street corner.
No, that's a very interesting issue. Maybe they should just start using... Are there locks that are exclusively combination that don't have those keys on the back? Or I know the basic combination locks that we all used in high school and the ones that are on the majority of lockers that people have a key on the back, so it is possible to pick them. But should we be requiring that students have upgraded locks? Is it an issue that we can't even really fight? Will people always find a way to break in regardless of how cool these locks are?
No, security should just get on their shit and make sure this doesn't happen anymore. I mean, if somebody comes in with a crowbar and pries open a locker, like, if you were monitoring the cameras and keeping a close watch on areas of the school where there are lockers, that shit won't happen. I mean, that is a noisy thing to do, and it's going to draw a lot of attention if I pull out a crowbar in a university campus hallway and start prying open a locker. It's pretty obvious what that person is doing, and if security can't even be bothered to monitor that sort of shit, then what do we have them around for? I mean, I would not pay for a locker at Ryerson. I already don't, but, I mean, I feel bad for the people that do.
I feel like stuff like that would be almost impossible to prevent. They only have a certain number of security personnel. If someone is patrolling the hallways for a certain period of time, there's always going to be a block of time where someone isn't in an area. No one's going to walk onto campus who plans to break into a locker with a crowbar. They have things in their bag. So, I don't know. I really feel like it's an issue that can't necessarily be solved easily unless we have really sophisticated computer locks with little computer pin pads that you use. But that would require way more money that Ryerson doesn't have. So, I don't know if there's an easy answer.
See, I'm guessing that Ryerson doesn't make that much money off of locker rentals. I mean, if Ryerson was making money here, they would find a way to make them secure. So it's just a matter of money. Like, do we need to charge more for having a locker? Or do we need to put them all in a secure place? But, I mean, if it was a financial priority for the university, I feel like we would be able to have lockers where the security is guaranteed. But I guess it's just come to the point where we have too many lockers, we're selling them for cheap, and yeah, I guess the poor student who thinks they got a great deal on a locker is going to lose when they put their MacBook or their DSLR in one of these lockers.
It's true. I know I'm in a position of privilege because I work at the eye-opener and I work at the rack pool. I have two fairly secure places to store my things. The eye-opener office is locked. If you guys stole my shit, I would have no control over that. But
whoops.
The office is...
I mean, go on.
Is that where my... Oh, whatever. Anyway, we'll talk about this later. But I have two fairly secure places to store my things, but if you are a commuter student, like I said before, where are you going to store your things overnight? And this is probably a uniquely urban campus problem. I don't know if this is big of an issue at places like York. Well, other things seem to be an issue at York.
Like
people
like
getting
raping.
Raped on the street. But no, I wonder if this is just a Ryerson problem. But then there's problems that aren't just Ryerson related. It seems to be a problem that we all have, and I don't really know why. The easiest joke to turn to when you can't think of anything else to say is, Nickelback sucks, hey?
That's a joke?
Yeah.
Huh?
People talk about how much Nickelback sucks a lot.
Nickelback locks? Is the problem that the backs of the locks are made of nickel, which is a soft metal?
No, it's a band from
People
Vancouver.
People are prying into the...
Wait, sorry, you said Vancouver?
Yeah.
No, Nickelback aren't from Vancouver.
They are so.
No, Nickelback are from Alberta. Which is why everyone hates Alberta.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
That's the root of the Alberta hate.
Unfortunately, I'm pretty sure. But no, I think the reason people hate Nickelback is because Nickelback exists.
There, I'm going to disclose that I heard about this while looking at Reddit earlier today, but I did find it really interesting. Somebody proposed that the root of the Nickelback hate started from a Comedy Central show that was called Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn from a couple of years ago.
I love Colin Quinn.
And there was a comedian...
Nobody watched that show, Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn, but not even me, and I like Colin Quinn, so...
Thanks, Jeff. That was a great comment. Back to you, Emma.
It was a joke by a comedian named Brian Posehn, and he talked about...
I mean, Brian Posehn, I can... Well.
Thanks, Jeff, that was a great comment.
Yeah.
Back to you.
Thanks, Jeff, for shitting on your... the point with correctness.
Where there was a link made between violent music and hurting yourself, and Brian Posehn said, well, I don't know if there's a connection between violent music and killing yourself, but I want to kill myself when I hear Nickelback, or something to that extent. So this commenter was proposing that the whole Nickelback hate started with this particular joke. But it has spiraled out of control. Not that Nickelback is a particularly innovative band. Most of their lyrics revolve around feeling regret, wishing someone was there, being sad.
Photographs.
They mostly sound like the hills.
Crying.
That was...
They got control on that, boys. Ah, fuck that.
That was awful,
that again.
Jeff.
Cut this out of the podcast.
This person brought up a good point. Hoobastank, which is a band from a similar era, which is just as bad.
Oh, I used to like Hoobastank.
I did too.
What's wrong with me?
What was the one? Disappear?
No.
Every time
the only song I remotely liked was called like The Reason or some stupid thing like that.
I'm sorry that I hurt you. You all just got taken back to being 14 right there. But...
Or 24 in Jeff's case.
Yeah.
Jeff is actually 45.
Those were heady times back there when I managed Hoobastank.
But there was several
other...
It's not
Hoobastank, it's Hoobastank.
I said Hoobastank.
No, you
the
said Tubastank. There's no tubas in this band.
Fuck you. Listen back. I swear to God, I did not say Tubastank.
Well,
Tubastank.
Tubastank.
The most unpopular guys in the high school band.
Hey, Tubastank.
Tubastank.
Oh, Lord.
Like,
but yeah.
How could you have a band name with Stank?
They had that big tuba that you use that goes around the guy for the marching band.
Yeah.
At least Nickelback is
yeah,
like
thanks
a
for
plain...
thanks for going along with that moment.
That's a plain, boring band name, but Hoobastank? Who thought that up? That is a band that is probably more worthy of hating than Nickelback is, so why has Nickelback
it's
received this much hate?
Stank in it.
It's true.
I don't know, like, does Nickelback deserve more hate than... No, you know what? No one deserves hate. Let's be nice about this, okay? Deserve more negative criticism.
Okay,
yeah.
Here's the
okay?
thing about
right.
Nickelback. they are wildly popular in the United States. There's a lot of great Canadian talent that doesn't really permeate the U.S. music market.
Celine Dion, for example, yeah.
Exactly.
She had her day in Quebec.
She only plays every night in Las Vegas. But yeah, Celine Dion, I'm pretty sure, is the best example of Canadian talent not crossing the border into the United States music market. But Nickelback did. And I hate them for their popularity. They're topping charts in the United States every so often.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And
that sounded better than Nickelback. Nickelback jokes.
So we just asked you what you thought about our love and sex issue.
35 minutes past the top of the hour, we got news, weather, and sports coming up.
We want to know what you think about Nickelback and why everyone hates them, because that seems to be super pervasive. So that is how we end our podcast, with our discussion of music that we listened to when we were 14 years old. At least that's what I listened to.
Wait,
when
what?
I was 14.
I listened to Wu-Tang Clan and Billy Mays.
Did you? Cool.
I did not.
Okay, that sounded too cool for being 14.
I don't think Billy Mays was.
Was he an artist?
I think he sold the Sham Wow was his big hit.
Well, that was his album, yeah. Sham
yeah,
Wow.
that was fucking fantastic.
Enter the 36 Sham Wows.
The Sham Wow, that's right. That was a good one.
Yeah, that's right.
That just brought him back
from
to his beginnings.
From the slums of Sham Wow.
So, we want to thank you all for listening to this 20th episode.
I'm going to talk over Emma.
Don't use lockers.
And look at people's names very carefully before you spell them. And look at the naked people in our most recent issue of The Eye Opener. Thank you for listening.
The penis is mine.